Ladies and gentlemen of Cork, a gig that you should attend for your own head, if for nothing else, is the Briary Gap in Macroom on the 17th of May. Brezzy is coming down to do his amazing podcast, Where's My Mind, special that is happening. Brezzy, how are you, me owl flower?
I am fantastic, KC. What is going on in Cork?
Everything is going on. It's still here since you were in the Opera House. You didn't blow the place up, thankfully.
No, good.
Yeah.
We're doing good. We're through the arse end of winter now into spring. You can start to see things poking their heads back out and a bit of life coming back. So it's one of my favourite times of the year, I have to say.
Yeah, it's lovely. It really is. That extra bit of light is good for us.
I'm telling you, I honestly, people, you know, I'm always asked the question, Freud used to say that Irish people couldn't be psychoanalyzed. That's not true, actually. He didn't say that, but people think he said that. Look where we're living. We don't see light for like 3 months. We had 2 weeks there where it was literally grey.
Yeah.
And I remember looking to my partner, Louise, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I need some kind of light. So it's kind of natural to feel a little bit
lethargic. How much of a play has our climate had on our mental health over the years in terms of what it's done to us? Like, I mean, has anyone really looked into climate-related mental health issues?
Oh yeah, like seasonal affective disorder is a very real thing. Like, and a lot of people probably carry it and don't realise it. And it's also a very natural thing. It's like, you know, if you look at the science and the research and evidence behind it, it's a very natural thing. Up in the Nordic countries, they get affected by it. But actually, in a lot of the Nordic countries, they give tax incentives to send people to the sun during winter. It's like they prescribe
amazing.
It. Like, it's a prescription. But here, obviously, could you imagine 500,000 Irish lads banging up to Lanzarote in January? I don't think they'd be too keen on it. But it's a real thing, and if people feel a little bit, well, that's why a lot of animals hibernate. They're like, I'm not dealing with this.
Oh man, I'd love to hibernate. I would love to. Oh, give me 4 months in bed.
Imagine just sitting in bed for like imagine the heads of us coming back out of it, like me and you.
Crawling out from under the mattress.
Yeah, down from a spool of Frosties downstairs.
There was two things I was reading this week, Brezzy, that blew my mind. First of all, if you do about 3 hours a day on social media, that's 9 years of your life. And second of all, we spend 80% of our day indoors, and only 100 years ago, it was 80% of our day outdoors. We've become so sedentary and so, you know, consumed by devices and technology. I mean, it's no wonder that there's a mental health epidemic when we're not getting outside enough.
See, we need to move past this, you know, wonder, why do we have a problem? It is not rocket science. I mean, you know, a lot of our work and research looks at this, and Jonathan Haidt's work, he wrote an amazing book called Anxious Generation, which is changing policy around the world, Casey. Like, there's actually governments making decisions now in a book, because it isn't those kind of wondering, is there a problem here? There is a problem. And, you know, of course there is. And the default setting of young people is to be present, to be mindful, to be, you know, in the moment. And even things like video games can be quite positive because they, you know, they push for community and stuff. But being outdoors, you know, I'll be joking about the weather here and all, but, you know, we live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, down in Cork. Like,
it is
jaw-dropping. And, you know, there's nothing like a northwest wind cutting the arse off you in winter to make you mindful.
Yeah.
So get out in it. I think that the big thing is, you know, as I said, I've moved way past the theory of this is a problem. I'm much more interested in what's the solution to this problem. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm focusing my work on, to be honest, is because I ain't going to change much unless I do something that presents that back to people, you know?
Well, what are we going to do about the whole device addiction thing? Because people can't leave the house now. And if you leave your phone behind, it's like you've almost left a limb behind. It's the attachment and the necessity to be connected is something that we're all guilty of. I'm currently holding my phone and while I'm talking to you, for notes purposes, obviously, with this chat. But,
boring. I'm like literally sitting on Twitter going, she's pretty.
No, nothing like that, I promise you. I'm reading a book at the moment and it's called Dose, okay? D-O-S-E, and it stands for dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. And it was put together by a neuroscientist from the UK. Brilliant book. And he's breaking down the addiction tendencies we have, the lack of focus that we have, the constant need for us to get those little shots of dopamine by engaging with people, checking in with friends, constantly seeing what's going on online. This is a relatively new thing. Are you going to see? Do you think we're going to go 360 and you'll see a complete revolution against smartphones, online technology? Do you think we're going that way?
Yeah, I think we are. And I think the other thing to say is, in my own PhD research, I think we have to be careful throwing out words like dopamine. We don't really know. You know, it's very hard to measure this stuff in the brain. The way they kind of use the science and research behind that is really proactive and positive. But one thing I've learned about my study is that we can't be too quick to think we know what's going on. And we have to be much more. I think sometimes you go on, you know, TikTok and you say, like, you see the word dopamine and like, it's been thrown around, I think, too easily and too without people truly understanding what it means.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I fundamentally believe this, and this isn't conspiracy theory. This is what I believe. There's going to be a thing where we move to what I call a post-digital revolution.
Yeah.
Which will be, there will be a mass rejection of social media, not technology, but social media. People will start rejecting us in their droves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's places in America now where people have colonies where you can't use it. I think that's going to naturally start happening because it's cannibalizing itself now. And it's gotten to the point. Like, I'll give you an example of it. The Irish rugby game at the weekend against France. And the way some people wrote and talked and threw stuff around that, people are exhausted with it. They're just tired of it. They're tired of seeing people like maybe, say, the Irish team who bring us such joy being abused by just, you know, come people and people jumping on that. So I think we're actually just tired. It's boring seeing people being abused. So I think there will be a mass rejection of it. And this isn't a lecture because I'm an absolute disaster on my phone. But what I did do, and I think it's important that I say something that helped me a lot, is I changed my relationship with it. I did three things. I bought a terrible Nokia phone.
Brilliant.
I only use my Nokia on Sunday. I call it Nokia Sundays. Give that number to the people you love. Because that's a big anxiety for me if somebody I love is in trouble and needs me.
Yeah.
So now they have that number. The other thing I tried for a week is I turn my phone off at 7 a.m. 7 p.m. I don't put it back on 7 a.m. for 7 days.
Oh wow, that's really that's really challenging because we mostly use our phone in the evening. You know.
Yeah, you'll be stressed, you'll be anxious, but actually feed into the anxiety a little bit. And then the other thing I did is like I took an app off a week off my phone. It's there's little things to do. Don't try and take this massive bite-sized chunk out of it.
Yeah, get overwhelmed.
And little tiny things. But the other thing I'll say, some of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life have been online. So it's there's just the hilarity. The I've learned how to do things I never thought I could do.
Of course,
online. There's a real positive side to it. But I think we have to accept now that it's rotting our brains, and it's just, you know, we're sitting online abusing people or reading the comments of abuse and jumping in on it. It was just before I came on, I saw that beautiful story of that Gracie Abrams and her gig and that young child holding up the poster. And it just made me feel really good.
Yeah.
You know, and there are those little pockets of it that I do embrace. But yeah, I wish I had the perfect answer for you, but I don't think anyone has.
Yeah, okay, so what you were talking about the whole dopamine thing and the link between that and our little spikes of dopamine and the addictive cycles of using social media. When you pick up your phone and you scroll, what's happening to Brezzy?
I just go down rabbit holes, I think, and you kind of don't know where your time has gone.
Yeah.
You know, and especially when you're in a position where you do have deadlines or you have something you have to deliver and you're constantly being distracted by it. So I do think it's definitely a thing. It's like my ability to focus has been so diminished.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was something I've always been pretty good at is kind of keeping my head down and doing things. And I'm not so good at it anymore. And I get so caught up. Like rather than going, you know, I'll have a look at my phone, see what's going on. Something will get me. And then I'm down the Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole and I'm gone.
Yeah.
And the next thing I look at my phone, I'm an hour gone. And then I'm sitting in my office at 7 o'clock in the evening when I should be sitting on my arse watching TV because I have to catch up with what I lost, and that stresses me out and then affects my sleep. So it's just that role of it, and I think that's what, you know, like everybody, my focus has gone to the dogs, and it is something I am generally good at, so I have to figure out, you know, how do I manage that.
Yeah. For people that don't know, and there's very few people that don't know Brezzy's story, it began with Gaelic football, transitioning then into Leinster rugby as a young lad, then music, then mental health. Now you're doing your PhD. Your story and your life has taken so many meandering twists and turns. And like, you've always been a very high achiever anyway. I think that's, you're naturally built that way. You're also physically naturally built like a brick house, which is very lucky for you. So sport came, which was completely natural. The anxiety that you suffered as a young fella, which led you onto your kind of mental health crusades. I mean, from where you started to where we are now, I'm sure you've seen, like we're a completely different country. And it's because of people like you and many others that have kind of ran with the baton of getting the messaging out there to talk to people and mind your mental health. Where do you think we are now?
I think, Casey, I think about this all the time, not because of my own journey, because a lot of what I would have experienced was absolutely dealable with. It wasn't a thing that was a mystery that was out there that I couldn't put my finger on. It was something that just was allowed fester. I lived in the Middle East when I was 13. I was caught up in the middle of what they now call the 9-day war, and I was in the middle of it. And then, you know, I carried that. I went to a very abusive primary school that had a huge impact on me. And these are normal, really uncomfortable, but experiences a lot of people have. And I just didn't process or deal with them. And
yeah,
that led me on a 15-year car crash, literally. Mm-hmm. But where do I think we are? I think societally we're in a far better place because the stigma is reducing. But I also am worried that we have to put a label on every single human emotion. We have to label it. We have to say, I'm broken. If, you know, you break up with someone, you're heartbroken, that's a normal human experience. It's something we all have. And I think we have to be careful when we throw out words like depression for somebody who's just going through it, you know, a couple of tough days. It's a very difficult thing to kind of, we have to be careful with that. But the societal stigma has really progressed. What I do worry about in society is I think we're okay with talking about stress, anxiety, neurodivergence, ADHD, but when you get into the weeds with the really serious stuff, the stuff that I'm researching and studying, like schizophrenia, like bipolar, I don't think we're anywhere close to where we think we are. I think we're, you know, people are still uncomfortable with that conversation. We still stigmatize it. We still see the terrible Netflix horror shows that stigmatize it. We still see the American politicians that talk about mental illness rather than talking about gun crime, and don't talk about things like the fact that they don't fund systems. So there's young children who are in deep need, who don't get access because their mum and dad aren't rich enough.
Yeah.
These are systems. So in Ireland, and I don't have to, tell people down in Cork or around Kerry especially, you know, our child and adolescent mental health services have, that was the catalyst for my PhD. I read a story of a child in Kerry being diagnosed by a psychiatrist in Dubai over Zoom and put on drugs and not being monitored. I spoke to an amazing young man, Davin Godfrey, who was put on nine different types of medication without a mental health diagnosis. Wow. So the issue now is, and people listening to this who don't have kids or maybe haven't been affected by this, that's not how society works. We have to care for children, even if they're not ours. Mm-hmm. And that's the Manic Street Preachers song, if we tolerate this, our children will be next. We did tolerate it.
Yeah.
And now what we have are systems that aren't supporting children in the right way. So my belief and my charity's work and everything we focus on is early prevention and early intervention. Let's get in there early. Let's support them. Let's take the pressure off the system because there's amazing people working in it. But I don't think our politicians are bad people. I think this scares them. I don't think they get it. I think they're very misguided on it. I don't think they believe there's votes in it. And I know that sounds crass. Yeah, but that's where we're at.
And also, it's like, I mean, this is not just, you know, isolated incident. This is a massive national emergency, and getting a grip on that with everything else that's going on in society, that seems to be a huge problem. But I do think, to be fair, the government has kind of stepped it up, nowhere near where it needs to be. But certainly over the last 10 years, you see a lot more investment. Still not enough, Brezzy. Still way not enough.
Casey, can I just finish this? Because I know I'm bang on. But like, rather than say it's awful and we need to fix it, I say to politicians, and if there's a politician listening to this, imagine we became world leaders at this.
Yeah, of
imagine
course.
We set the bar. 5 million people. Most of us are pretty sound. We're relatively politically stable. When you look at the likes of America,
yeah, of course,
we're wealthy. Why can't we set the bar? Why can't we go, right, this is going to be the thing, and we'll show the rest of the world? Because there's nowhere really around the world doing it very well. We could do it. And I think rather than being focusing on the fact that it needs to be far better than it is currently, let's focus on what we could become as well. And I think that's why I'm doing my PhD research.
Brezzy's coming to Macroom, 17th of May. There's very few tickets left, so go and grab them. It's a night that you're absolutely going to love. It's music, storytelling. It's everything's involved in this brilliant, brilliant show. So don't miss it when it comes to Macroom. It's a rare chance to go see Brezzy live. And also, the podcast is still rocking. You've got like people like Deepak Chopra and Moby. I love the Adam Clayton podcast, Brezzy. You've done some great stuff. So well done. Keep it up, man.
Nice one, man. Thanks for meeting.
We'll see you in Macroom.
Deadly. I'll see you there, bud.